So what's your state of mind spiritually before God these days?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
A few years ago, I interviewed David Aikman on my radio show. Man fluent in Russian and Chinese, international background as a journalist, a man who's interviewed, you name it, world leaders, political leaders, kings, man who's interviewed Hamas terrorists and others, spiritual leaders, I mean a wide, wide range of people. And I asked him a question. I said, out of everyone that you've interviewed, which interview stood out the most? Which person that you talked to? I mean, there were some chilling terrorists and evil, just all kinds of different things. But I said, which person that you interviewed stood out the most? He said, Billy Graham. Without hesitation, answered, Billy Graham. Why? He said, because all the interviews I did, I was asking the people about them. He said, Billy Graham wanted to know about me and how I was doing. Yeah. That's God's heart, friends, and I want to turn the focus and turn the attention to you. How are you doing? How are you doing in the midst of one of the craziest seasons in American history? Maybe, putting everything together, the craziest, the wildest, the most divided, the most chaotic, the most uncertain, the one that reads like a bad novel because nobody would paint all of this into one year. It's just too extreme, too crazy, and we're still in October. How are you doing? What's your state of mind? Hey, you get to weigh in today, 866-34-TRUTH. I'd love to hear from you, 866-348-7884. If you want to talk about the Amy Coney Barrett hearings for her nomination to the Supreme Court, we can talk about that. We can talk about the elections in general and where you stand as a believer. But I want to know, above all, how are you doing? What's your spiritual state of mind? Now, I've got exciting news, a way that you can weigh in if you can't call in live. So just stay here 1 second, and I'll give you another phone number. But everyone that can call, 866-348-7884. Look at the results of a poll I did on Twitter. Check this out. I asked on Twitter, how are you doing? Where are you coming from? My specific wording. So this is October 9th, right? Here's a personal question for you. If you consider yourself a person of faith, I especially wanted to know what people were feeling going through, if they feel they have God in their lives. What's your state of mind these days? Pick the answer that most describes how you're feeling. Now, on Twitter, you can give four choices, so that's what I was limited to. So the four choices were discouraged, weary, optimistic, energized. And so here are the four choices again. Trying to give a range. Obviously, there are hundreds of other emotions you could put down, but try to give a range. Discouraged, weary, optimistic, energized. So if you're just hearing that, where would you put yourself? And how do you think people voted in general? So discouraged, that was 12.7%. Weary, that was the highest number, 39.3%. We do the polls for 24 hours, so we got 1,854 votes in the 24 hours. Discouraged, 12.7%. That was actually the lowest, was discouraged. Weary was the highest, 39.3%. It's been just one thing after another. Where it's terribly wearing right now. Life is very wearying. Optimistic, 33.9%. So that was second. And energized, 14%. So some are just energized by the conflict or energized by the opportunity around us. And then we got many, many people added in their comments. So if you look at discouraged and weary together, that gets you at 52%, and then the other 48% optimistic, energized. So overall, between negative and positive, it was closer than you might expect. But it's not surprising for people of faith, because with God in your life, you have a different perspective. When you know the Lord, you have a different perspective. Here, when there's a fire in your neighborhood, if it's your own house, you have one perspective. If it's the neighbor's house, you have another perspective. If you're a fireman, you have another perspective, right? So this is the moment you're waiting for where you can now go and save a life or go or help someone from losing everything. If you're a fireman, if it's your own home, you feel one way, your neighbor's home, you feel you're concerned, but you feel differently. So the way these things impact us, the craziness of the day, the divisiveness that we're living in, the media wars, the political wars, and the pandemic and the economy and nothing, you know, even the sports world, things are not normal by any stretch of the imagination. But there have been, in baseball, 6 Hall of Famers have died this year. 3 of the greatest pitchers who ever pitched died. It's just like, what? It's everything is just out of skew or death or that kind of focus. How do we respond in the middle of it? When I asked on Facebook, when I last checked, I couldn't do a poll on Facebook, so I just asked the question. We had over 1,500 comments of people wanting to weigh in and share how they're doing. So we're going to get to that. We're going to hear how different people are doing. We're going to share some things with you that will encourage, help, because that's our goal, build you up, strengthen you. But here's the neat news. If you're listening on podcast, and we know the great majority of our listeners actually listen after the show, don't listen or watch live. So if you're listening on podcast, or maybe it's Saturday night and you're watching on Dish TV or Pluto TV, you're watching on the America's Voice channel, or you're watching this on another network, I'm going to give you an 800 number. Now, it's not going to retroactively splice you into the show. No, we don't have the technology that if you call 5 days later, we can miraculously splice you into the live show. Sorry, we don't have a reverse time tunnel. But here's the deal. If you call this number, and maybe you're just at work now and you're listening, but you can't call in or whatever reason, you can leave a message. You say, what's the use of that? I'll tell you. You don't like me. You want to give me a piece of your mind. You differ. You just want to be able to speak your mind for a couple of minutes without being interrupted. Whatever it is, I'm going to give you a number, and you can call this number 24 hours a day, all right, anytime within the United States. You can call this number, leave a message up to about 2 minutes, all right? We don't want much more than that. So up to about 2 minutes, leave a message. We're not going to be responding to questions there, so don't leave questions. But if you have a comment, if you want to weigh in on something, you want to express yourself, you want to differ with me, you want to challenge me on something, you want to give me a piece of your mind, that's what this phone line is for, and we will play some of the better calls on the air subsequently. So you can get your voice out to the nation and to the world via internet by calling this number. You ready? It's 1-800-618-8480. Okay? 1-800-618-8480. That is not to get on live now. That is to call and to leave a message. Again, 2 minutes or less, so keep a watch on your clock as you're doing it. Don't leave questions. What's the meaning of this? Because we're not going to be responding to those. But if you got a point you want to raise, something you want to say, something that's relevant, something where you differ with me, or you want the whole world to know what you think, or maybe a positive testimony, maybe something that's happened that we've been able to be a blessing in your life, that's the number to call. One more time, 1-800-618-8480. Before I get some of the Twitter and Facebook responses that I want to share with you, I also have a clip I want to play where we talked about some of the warnings of Justice Scalia. A few years back, when he passed away, we talked about some of the warnings he issued. I'm going to play a video from several years back now so that you can hear this, because Amy Coney Barrett is a disciple of Justice Scalia. So as she's going through her confirmation hearings, I want to hear what she had to say. And also some controversy about the drug Regeneron that President Trump took that said cured him of the virus. Talk about that because of some possible pro-life issues. But we'll go straight to the phones. And we start with Leron in the Bronx. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking my call. You know, you asked the question how we're doing through everything that's happening. And I just want to say, you know, I'm doing great. One of the things that I've used, I'm still working from home. I've used this opportunity to get closer to the Lord, you know, to seek his heart and to seek what he's doing in the earth. Sometimes what God is doing, it does not align with what we think should be happening. So during this whole thing, and everything that's happening, I'm very selective to what I listen to that's going on And I really took this opportunity to draw closer to the Lord and to get to know him more and his heart concerning everything that's happening politically, everything that's happening with the COVID. So that's how I've been spending my time, and I've seen tremendous results and growth in my personal Christian life. God bless you.
Yes. Hey, stay there one second. Those are such good words and such wise words. What kind of things did you filter out, and what did you replace them with?
So, you know, what I try to do, I limit the news media that I listen to.
Yeah.
And what I do, I listen to both perspectives, but I don't let it consume my day, especially with the COVID news. I don't allow the news to consume my day. I'm not checking every second and what's going on. I'm not, you know, I do look at it. I keep up to breath to what's happening, but I don't allow the media and those things to consume my day. I spend most of my day in prayer and reading the word and, you know, listening to programs like yours and stuff that will benefit me spiritually. So that's one of the things that I did, because there's so much information out there, and we have to be careful, even as Christians, what we let in.
Very careful. And what tangible effects has this had on your life?
So the tangible, you know, I've gotten closer to my family, you know, unsaved family members, as I spent more time with the Lord. You know, one of the things, it can be very uncomfortable to minister to, especially your close family members. But I've seen where the Lord used me during this time. And many of my family members, their hearts are turning to the Lord, where they have made even commitments, you know, to serve the Lord, and have made changes in their personal life. So I'm just seeing the hand of God move in my family's life and during this time. And I just give God thanks for that, for what he's doing in my life and in my family's life.
Yeah, my brother, thank you for the call. And these are such life-giving words. And, I mean, everything that he just said tries to get both perspectives of what's happening in the news, but doesn't let it dominate him, not consumed by it, steps back to be with the Lord. Friends, remember, a lot of the news is meant to be sensationalistic, is meant to draw you in, is meant to agitate you, and it's not healthy. Oh, it is not healthy. But what our brother just said is so healthy and so right, and something all of us can do. We may not have hours and hours and hours to pray and read the Bible and so on. We have limited time schedule, but we can step back from so much of the junk that inundates us and floods us, and instead get some life-giving streams. You'll be changed. People around you will see the change. Hey, thank you. Thank you, Liron, for the call. We'll be right back. Shake the
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. 866-34-TRUTH. How are you doing in the midst of a crazy year, craziest that any of us have ever lived through here in America? How are you doing personally? How's your faith? How's your state of mind? Where are your emotions? So I asked this question on Twitter, and I want to give you some of the responses. Now, again, between Facebook and Twitter, a couple thousand or more responses, but let me give you a few. The general response, the number one characteristic of how people are doing, weary. But number two, not that far behind, was optimistic. And then a distant third, energized, and a distant fourth, discouraged. So Let me read to you some of the comments that were posted on Twitter. I think you'll find these helpful, all right? And my goal is to build you up, strengthen you in the midst of the battle, in the midst of the challenges. A Twitter Lady V, or Lady 5, I'm not sure. Which is it? Wrote this. David encouraged himself in the Lord. We are told in the Bible to not be weary in well-doing. For when the time comes, we shall reap our rewards. We have the only truth, Jesus, and know that God cannot lie. Reasons for optimism. Although I'm concerned in the political front here, I know it is God's sovereign choice as to what is next. So I try to rest in that while fighting for truth. We appeal to our Lord because all the power is in his hand. So there have been friends of mine who've said that they firmly believe that Donald Trump will be the next president, but only if the church really prays. Now, it doesn't mean prays for him to be president, but prays and just seeks God for his best, for his plan, for his will. And that's definitely happened. There's a lot of prayer going on right now. But can we say, Father, we are confident. We are confident that you are in control, that in the midst of the chaos, can you put your head on the pillow at night, recognizing that God still sits on his throne, that Jesus is still Lord, that the world is not just spinning freely and on the axis, and just is going to go off into oblivion. There's still an order. There are still natural laws that God has established. There's still morning and evening. There's still sun, moon, and stars. There are children being born. There are people dying. Life is going on. And God is not just sitting idly by thinking, oh, I hope it doesn't get really bad down there because I don't know what to do. Yeah, so do we have the perspective of people of faith? And do you realize that as crazy as this year is, that believers, Christians in other parts of the world, this would be like a vacation for them. This would be paradise for them, to have the liberties we have and to have the prosperity that we have, even in the midst of the economic downturn with COVID. For many, it'd be like, are you kidding me? I'd be there in a heartbeat. This is like the best thing I've ever seen. But for the rest of us that have grown up in this environment, challenging year. So it tells us Acts 13 and tells us about David. And then it goes back to some of the accounts in 2 Samuel where there's a lot of distress and things are bad. And so David strengthens himself in the Lord. He encourages himself in the Lord. Do you know how to do that? Do you know how to take God's promises and apply them to your own life? Or look away from your own situation and look at who God is. Here, look at it like this. Little kid falls down a well. It's 12 feet down. It's muddy and, you know, damp on the bottom. You know, he falls down. He skins his knee a little, but he's okay. But he's in a total panic. 6 years old, he's in a total panic, all right? And dad finds out what happens, goes over, and at the top of the well says, hey, just look at me. Look at daddy. Look at daddy. Don't worry about the snakes or bugs. Just look at daddy. Look at daddy. We're going to get it. Come on. Look, everything's going to be all right. You're going to be out of there in a minute. We're just going to throw a rope down and put it around you. You're going to be just fine. Don't worry about it. In fact, tell you what, I'm going to put the rope around me and I'm going to come down. My friend's going to bring me and I'm going to pick you up and bring you up. So just look at daddy. And that's what little child is. Hey, we're like little children in many ways. And we need to put our focus in the right place. And when you look at the Lord, when you focus, when you, okay, sit your eyes on him, all right, we can ride this out. We can get through this. In fact, we can come out better through it. All right, let's look at another comment from Twitter. This was Birmingham Scott. He says, I'm always optimistic because, quote, all the nations will come to the Lord, Psalm 86:9. I know who wins this unfolding story. Christ is king. He conquered the grave. He'll also conquer the nations. So, in other words, the gospel is going to go forward. People around the entire world are going to come to God. So I should live with optimism. I should live with a sense of confidence. It dawned on me years ago when I was trying to help an institution launch something new. I was trying to help them with it. And then at a certain point, someone that had not been part of that process was going to interview me to see if I could be an ongoing part of it, you know, just a technicality. And because of some of my spiritual beliefs, it didn't fit, even though they knew who I was from day one. And I was there to help them. And I remember feeling, they failed the test. You say, wait, no. They interviewed you, and because of your spiritual beliefs, they didn't want you to be helping. I said, yeah, they failed the test because I know they're good people. And I know that ultimately they're going to agree with these things because they're scriptural. So it's just a matter of time before they get it right. I knew I didn't fail. I didn't feel like it. And I thought, where does that attitude come from? Because there are plenty of other times I think, yeah, I blew it, made a mistake, wish I could take this back, do this differently, so on and so forth. Plenty of things, sure. I don't think everything I do is right. Of course not. But I knew I was on the right side of this issue. And I said, why is it that I have that sense of confidence because I know that God is moving us ultimately in the right direction. So I live with a certain sense of optimism. And often the darker it gets, the more excited I get because I think this is the moment for the light. This is the moment we've been waiting for. It's uncomfortable. It's difficult. But remember, fireman analogy, when the alarm rings, that's what you're made for. You're sitting around the fire department, you know, polishing the engine and whatever. And okay, whoa, fire. You're out of there instantly. You're trained for that. Why? You're a firefighter. There's that good adrenaline to get the job done. Save somebody's lives. Save somebody's possessions. Yeah, that's it. Save a life. Save families. Do whatever. So the darker it is, more our light can shine. Okay, here's another comment. This is from the Pink Geologist. I wanted to choose both discouraged and optimistic. But ultimately, although the direction, direction our country may be headed is somewhat discouraging, our family works to remember where our hope is anchored each day, and we usually end on that high note. That's a great family policy. Try to end each day, or remember where our hope is anchored each day, and end on that high note. So, okay, in the midst of everything that's wrong and bad, do you talk about who Jesus is? Do you talk about the promises in the Bible? You talk about God's faithfulness. Here's another one from Twitter. Gina B. Gina B said this, things look darker and darker. I don't know if I can hold out. I've got so many hoops to jump through, and when I ask for help, I'm treated like a loser. Why try anymore? Maybe that's you. Maybe you feel like that's where you are. Why try? It's so difficult. It's so much of an uphill battle. And when I ask for help, I'm treated like a loser. Why try? Well, let me give you two answers to that. Well, let me give you three answers. The reason God sent Jesus into the world is because we need a Savior. So join the human race. We all need saving. We're all losers, ultimately, outside of God's mercy and grace. So let's start there. He sent a Savior because we're lost. That's number one. Number two, often at our weakest point, that's our best point, because we are not self-dependent. We are not self-reliant. We are not boasting of our ability, of our strength. No, I need help. We recognize that. I need help. I can't do it on my own. Often, that's when the greatest breakthroughs come. Remember, Jesus doesn't resurrect in glory before he's crucified in ignominy, in shame, in agonizing, painful, public, humiliating death. Out of that, he's resurrected as Lord to live forever, resurrected and demonstrated to be the Son of God, to live forever and to rule and reign. I hate going through crucifixion-type experiences, but often you realize that's the only way to come out on the other side in a lasting, better way. Maybe the terrible things you're going through can be the stepping stones to get you where you need to go. Maybe what the world or society or Satan or whoever or whatever meant for evil, God can turn for good. And then here's the third thing I'd say, if you just quit, then what? If you give up the fight entirely, all you get is depressed. All you get is more miserable, more hopeless. So this is a great time to call out to God. Some of you have been very self-sufficient your whole lives, and you scorn the idea of a God. Religious people are so weak. No, some might be, but the reason people put their trust in God is not because we're weak, it's because we're realists. It's because we understand we didn't create ourselves. We didn't put ourselves here. And our best solutions are very, very minor compared to the overall crisis of the human race. So we need God. We need God. And I'm here on the air not just to be a political talking head, not just to be another conservative pundit. I'm here as someone first and foremost who's a man of faith, a child of God, a follower of Jesus, a Jewish follower of Jesus. And I'm here above all to say, let's look to him. Let's lean on him. Let's cry out to God and say, I'm broken right now. I'm broken. I need help. I don't just need a crutch. I need emergency treatment. God is faithful. And as we truly call out to him and say, Lord, I'm not trying to live my life. I want to give my life to you. He's not going to refuse you. All right, we're going to come back and talk about some of the warnings of Justice Scalia. Talk about the drug that President Trump is touting and some of the allegations of hypocrisy over it because of pro-life issues. and then get to more of your comments about how are you doing.
Fire we want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So this is the week of the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearings. And nothing new in terms of what the approach is. You know, at the outset, Lindsey Graham said, we know all the Democrats are going to vote no, all the Republicans are going to vote yes. And you know that there are going to be attacks from the Democrat side. Well, she's going to abolish affordable health care and all these people will die because of it and so on. Look at how the Republicans have mishandled COVID-19 and they're going to do the same. And this, it's terror and horrible. And the Republicans are going to say she's eminently qualified and look at the recommendations she has, even from the American Bar Association, and you can't attack her faith or presume you're going to know what the, I mean, you could pretty well script the way the thing's going to go. But as far as the rightness of doing this now, yeah, if you have the president and the Senate, and they're both Democrat, they're both Republican, and you have a vacancy to fill, this is basically what virtually always happens. Basically always fill the vacancy right before the elections. If it's divided, then it's not going to happen. So that's what happened with Obama being president, but this, the Republicans having the Senate. Now, it's not the case. You can be quite sure if it was Hillary Clinton and Democrats controlling things now and they had an opportunity to fill the Ginsburg spot, they would do it. It's basically what's always been done, as Ted Cruz mentioned in his opening comments. But what I want to do is go back. This is 4 years ago. I want to take you back into a broadcast where I talked about the warnings of Justice Scalia. And I was reminded of him. A friend of mine sent me a meme, and I want to put this up for everyone watching, but I'll read it for everyone else. This was a quote from Justice Scalia. And Justice Scalia said, God assumed from the beginning that the wise of the world would view Christians as fools, and has not been disappointed. If I brought any message today, it is this: have the courage to have your wisdom regarded as stupidity, be fools for Christ, and have the courage to suffer the contempt of the sophisticated world. Now, what's fascinating is that when Justice Ginsburg was voted for, even though she was known as a progressive icon, she didn't say that quite openly in the hearings, but she was known as that, she got 96 out of 100 votes. Justice Scalia, known as a devout conservative Catholic, got 97 out of 100 votes. Now we know it's almost just party line votes, the level of divisiveness. And we've had that Justice Bork and Clarence Thomas. Those things were incredibly divisive in our past history. But Justice Scalia issued some warnings after some very, very important rulings. And I think it's important as we're looking at the next potential Supreme Court justice and someone who was in the image of Justice Scalia, but here as a woman, Catholic woman with 7 children, I want to go back and see what we were saying back in 2016 based on the warnings of Justice Scalia. It's a clip that's a few minutes long. Let's listen and watch together. Justice Scalia had some very, very clear and important prophetic warnings when the Supreme Court ruled in 2003 by a 6-3 decision in Lawrence v. Texas that there was a constitutional right to sodomy. Justice Scalia raised his voice then. And in 2013, in the case of the United States versus Windsor, when the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, was overturned, he raised his voice yet again. And then last year in the Obergefell case, when the Supreme Court redefined marriage, Justice Scalia raised his voice once again. Now, he hasn't been the only one to raise his voice in dissenting opinions, but his dissenting opinions have often been the most scathing, the most surgical, and in many ways, the most prophetic. So there's an article, 2013, in the ABA Journal, Deborah Casson White's, the article entitled, Scalia Predicts the Future Once Again in Gay Marriage Dissent. So listen to what Justice Scalia wrote back in 2003. If the Supreme Court is going to find, hear me, a constitutional right to sodomy, what a bizarre position. What a bizarre proposition based on the Constitution. But if they will actually find that right in the Constitution, what will it lead to? Listen to what Scalia wrote in 2003. State laws against bigamy, same-sex marriage, adult incest, prostitution, masturbation, adultery, fornication, bestiality, and obscenity. Every single one of these laws is called into question by today's decision. Now, there are a couple things in his list that you'd say, what does the state have to do with that? What do state laws have to do with that? But let's look at some of the others. He starts with bigamy, and then he says same-sex marriage, adult incest, just those three. On what basis can you find, can the court find a, quote, constitutional right, a constitutional right to sodomy without a constitutional right, say, to bigamy or same-sex marriage or adult incest? Now, here's what's interesting. No sooner was a Supreme Court decision announced in Lawrence v. Texas in 2003 that gay activists were celebrating. New York Times reports this, June 26, 2003, quote, "Gay men and lesbians poured into the streets today to celebrate a Supreme Court decision striking down or strictly limiting the country's last remaining sodomy laws in 13 states. Quote, from Florida to Alaska, thousands of revelers vowed to push for more legal rights, including same-sex marriages." So Scalia asked back then, based on the court's ruling, what justification could there possibly be for denying the benefits of marriage to homosexual couples? He was right. If there's a constitutional right to sodomy, again, which is bizarre, and there's nothing constitutional about it, then how are you going to say that two men cannot, quote, marry if you have a constitutional right to sodomy? You might not see the immediate logic of it, but he clearly did. He clearly saw the connection, as did gay activists celebrating that very thing. Now, let me say this. This was not a law that was enforced, but it was a law that was good to have on the books because it stood as a bulwark against this developing further in society. For example, it is still a law in Singapore, and gay activists have been fighting against it. I spoke with a former Supreme Court justice from Singapore, a committed Christian man, and I spoke to some other leaders there, Christian leaders and others, about this very issue. And the agreement was, even though this is not something that people are policing, they're not going to people's homes and seeing what's being practiced, it's good to have on the books as a bulwark against other aspects of gay activism. That's the case here. Scalia was right. Okay, so according to Justice Scalia, the court has largely, in 2003, he said this, the Supreme Court has largely signed on to the so-called homosexual agenda. You could say since, they've not just signed on, they've signed, sealed, and delivered it. Here are your goals, signed, sealed, and delivered, and realized. All right, now, 2013, the overturning of DOMA. Some critics of Justice Scalia have said this, actually, he interpreted this ruling too broadly, and now justices have been saying, well, Justice Scalia said so. No, he rightly saw the fruit of overturning DOMA. He rightly saw where this was going. So supporters of same-sex marriage have used his word to say, you see, redefining marriage is inevitable. But in point of fact, what Scalia warned about was this, and I'll read it to you. By formally declaring anyone opposed to same-sex marriage an enemy of human decency, the majority, meaning the majority of the Supreme Court, arms well every challenger to a state law restricting marriage to its traditional definition. This is Scalia, 2013, when the Supreme Court overturned the Defense of Marriage Act. Quote, as I have said, the real rationale of today's opinion, whatever disappearing trail of its legalistic argle-bargle one chooses to follow, is that DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, is motivated by, quote, bare desire to harm couples in same-sex marriages. How easy it is, indeed how inevitable, to reach the same conclusion with regard to state laws denying same-sex couples marital status. He was exactly right. It was one of Justice Kennedy's arguments, that there's no possible reason to oppose redefining marriage other than animus against homosexual couples, which is absolutely, completely absurd. On every level, it is absolutely absurd. And yet, that is now enshrined in the Windsor versus United States case. It's now enshrined in that case by saying that if you oppose redefining marriage, you're only doing it for these reasons. That was in Windsor, and Scalia rightly put his finger on it. Now, as the Supreme Court redefines marriage, he and the other three dissenting justices, so the four dissenting justices, all raised their voice, all gave prophetically accurate rulings, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. Listen to what Justice Scalia said. With the court redefining marriage last June, today's decree says that my ruler and the ruler of 320 million Americans coast to coast is a majority of the nine lawyers on the Supreme Court. In other words, they can now define the meaning of marriage. Who gave the courts that right? Good for Justice Scalia. He also said this: this practice of constitutional revision by an unelected committee of nine, always accompanied as it is today by extravagant praise of liberty, robs the people of the most important liberty. They assert it in the Declaration of Independence and one in the Revolution of 1776, the freedom to govern themselves. You know, Hebrews 11, speaking of Cain, speaking of Abel, who was killed by Cain, he being dead yet speaks, just to Scalia being dead yet speaks, and his words will continue to sound in the days to come. How urgent it is that we elect a God-fearing president who will appoint God-fearing justices to the Supreme Court. Otherwise, we are in big, big trouble in the decades to come. All right, so that was back in 2016 that I said those things. And again, pointing to Justice Scalia's warnings and the wisdom of his warnings, and you can see how things have played out since then. With the Obergefell decision redefining marriage in 2015, with his death 2016. And look, his big point is this is not the way it's supposed to be, that nine lawyers, unelected, serving for life, get to make these massive decisions. You know, find a constitutional right to abortion, or a constitutional right to sodomy, or a constitutional right to redefine marriage. That's for the people to decide through their elected officials. And that's the same thing that Amy Coney Barrett has said, that it's not the role of the court to do certain things. And this just came out recently with Justices Thomas and Alito reiterating that. It was not the role of the court to redefine marriage, because now you set up the nation in a hostile position towards people of faith. All right, we'll be back. We'll get some encouragement for you, and then we'll touch on President Trump and the Regeneron drug. Don't go anywhere.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. So how are you doing? What's going on in your own heart, your own life, in the midst of this craziness? When I asked this question on Facebook, we got a lot of comments. When I checked last night, early this morning, it was well over 1,500 comments, just people wanting to weigh in. Let me share a few, then I'm going to grab a call or two, and then one more item of business today. This was from Lisa. She said, honestly, I'm weary and tired, yet hopeful. I know God is in control. I know things will get much, much worse before they get better. It's time to seek the Father's face like never before. He's giving us the grace to grow in our faith before the true persecution begins. Ah, that's a sobering perspective, no? That there are a lot harder times that we can expect as followers of Jesus in this world. And he'll be with us then. So how should you look at this time, which, as bad as it is a lot better than it could be in many, many other respects. So maybe tired, but leaning on the Lord. All right, here's what Cynthia said. It's hard for me not to let the world events affect me. I have to constantly remind myself that God's in control. He knows my future, and whatever happens, he'll prepare for me. It gives me, it helps give me peace. Yeah, Cynthia, you speak for many others as well as you say that. My friend Pastor John Kilpatrick would often say that as believers, as followers of the Lord, that everything in our lives is Father-filtered. In other words, that God is protecting us in certain ways and filtering certain things in terms of us being impacted negatively. Oh, yeah, we go through hard times. We're not exempt from that. We even suffer tragedy in this world. And yet God is with us in the midst of it in a unique way that only his children can understand. All right, let's see. Victoria said this, being candid, weary, scared, trusting God one minute, then worrying the next, thankful for his provision, worried for my children's and grandchildren's future. Victoria, so many find themselves in the exact same position you do. And that's when we take up Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7. Not to be anxious about anything. Well, first to set our hearts on the Lord, rejoice in the Lord. Then Philippians 4, 7 through 8, culminating verse 9. What do? We're not anxious. Rather, we take everything to the Lord, every burden, every concern. With thanksgiving, meaning recognizing who God is, but we leave it with him. We lay it on him. We give every weight, every concern, every burden, Lord, I'm weary. I'm just, and at a certain point, you begin to feel, okay, he's carrying this. He's helping. He's answering. Sometimes it's just doing it every day and then reminding yourself of his promises in scripture. Sometimes it's just spending a lot of time with him one night or one day, and you kind of unburden yourself. All right. And Tammy said this in terms of her state of mind. I feel peaceful and grateful and thankful, definitely energized. I feel my faith increasing and growing so strong every day. And it's all Jesus. He's doing it all. For those of you having a hard time, just remember, for such a time as this, Acts 17:26, you are living in an appointed time and place, and all of history and all the nations, the Father chose for you to be alive in this time and this place. Pretty exciting if you ask me, praying for all of you. Well, that's a transcendent perspective that God chose to put us right here, right now. So we're made for this hour. We've been tailor-made for this hour. We've been appointed for this hour. Time to rise and shine. Time to make a difference. You know how it is. The more you get into a pity party, the worse things bad. It's really bad. It's worse than bad. Or you can say, yeah, I'm hurting. I'm struggling. But God is faithful and God is good. And you ever been at a funeral and you're grieved and someone's holding a little baby and the baby happens to catch your eye and the giant smile comes on that baby's face? And what do you just, all you can do is smile. Yeah, it's a funeral, but you see that baby, the life, the joy, the innocence. The same thing when we begin to focus on who God is and his faithfulness and what he is doing in the midst of pandemic and crisis and division and chaos. Smile comes to your face and to your heart. All right, let's go over to Thomas in Dallas, Texas. What's your state of mind, sir?
Thank you so much, Dr. Brown. My state of mind is very optimistic. The issues we have in life, for the most part, you know, sicknesses, diseases, deaths, are much worse than the political atmosphere to me. I heard someone say recently that if Biden wins, that might just be what's needed for the believers to really speak up and get out there and talk to people more, just like the racial injustice that other people are bringing up and other issues that they're hitting the streets for. We need to continue to get out there and hit the streets more. I've had a really deep burning to bring people to Jesus, just like you do, and it's such a blessing. And for those who are confused about Trump and other things, I've really learned lately through your guidance and others, viewing things through a biblical lens. So when you hear a policy of someone else and you're like, well, I don't know if I like that or not, open the Bible, you know, look online, you know, through trusted sources, or talk to your pastor if they're, you know, a Bible-believing, you know, church, and ask them, you know, does this align with the Word? And if it doesn't, that's why I always believe that choosing policies over personalities is the way to go. And regardless of what happens, more people, including myself, throwing myself under the bus, we need to get out there and bring more people to Christ so that when we're in heaven, we hear that, you know, we've done a good job and not just sat and done nothing.
Yeah, and think of that amazing reward, not just the smile of the Father and God saying, well done, good and faithful servant, but the joy of being with people forever and ever and ever that are there partly because you took the time to love on them, show them kindness, get involved with their lives, tell them about Jesus. Wow, think of it. Hey, Thomas, thank you so much for the call. And look, I'm voting for Trump. I'm praying for God's will. I'm not praying for Trump to be elected. I'm praying for God's will. I'm voting based on my responsibility, and I'm praying for God to do what is best for America. Look, many things I've gone through have been miserable, but they've made me who I am in God, and they've helped break me and humble me. I wish I didn't have to go through them, but going through them may be better for it. It could be that things go in the wrong direction that brings awakening in the church, but it's going to be painful in the process. On the flip side, don't put your trust in a man. Say it once more for, what, the 1,000th time? 4 more years of Donald Trump is not going to save America. And 4 more years of Donald Trump will only be more deeply divided unless God changes him dramatically who he is. So let's vote our conscience, but let's put our faith and trust where it belongs to be. Okay, really quickly. I wrote an article about Donald Trump, Regeneron, and the supposed hypocrisy of the pro-life movement. And this is the accusation. How can you say Donald Trump is pro-life when, in fact, he's touting a drug that was developed using a fetus of a baby aborted in the Netherlands in the 1970s? How can he possibly be pro-life? And there are headlines here, UK Metro. Trump faces hypocrisy allegations after it was revealed Regeneron is made from stem cells originally taken from an embryonic kidney. That kidney was taken during an elective abortion performed in the Netherlands during the 1970s. MIT Technology Review. Trump's antibody treatment was tested using cells originally derived from an abortion. The Trump administration has looked to curtail research with fetal cells, but when it was life or death for the president, no one objected. Business Insider. Anti-abortion groups say they stand behind president's use of a drug tested on cells derived from an aborted fetus because the president, quote, was not involved with that abortion. Okay, so look at the article. It's on the AskDrBrown.org website, on stream.org, been posted on other sites as well. I get into details from scientists, from researchers, who say actually there's no connection to aborted fetal tissue. But let's step back. First, when the company itself, Regeneron itself, says, no, there's no connection to an aborted baby. That's false information. When the company itself says that, do you think the doctors that were administering this to Trump were aware of a controversy going back to aborted baby tissue from the 1970s? Do you think they're aware of that? Or do you think they said to the president, okay, Mr. President, we just want you to know that the drug that you're about to use, we think could help, and I know you want to try it, and that the drug you want to use is actually tested using fetal cells and so on, and you oppose that. You think he knew? You think as he's been touting it, he's aware of that? And again, when Regeneron itself denies that, why would you think that he would know? I doubt the doctors would even know that. It's a pretty obscure fact. Now, one of my colleagues with scientific background was on a conference call with two scientists who work with the Charlotte Lozier Institute, Pro-Life Institute, and they said, no, absolutely not. There is no connection between aborted fetal tissue. Now, when you get into the description, I have it all. I quoted it at length in the article. Your head will spin. Like, well, I don't even understand what's being talked about medically. But they're saying there's no connection. Interestingly, my friend said that there were two famous liberal news outlets, reporters from there that were on the conference call. And he said they were completely contemptuous, hostile and contemptuous. They were not looking for truth. But here's the big thing. You're actually going to say that if in fact, there's a connection to an aborted baby from the 1970s that was somehow tested, used to help develop this. You're going to compare that to the willful slaughter of more than 60 million babies and to someone standing up against that? Oh, it's a fair ethical question. If there is some connection to fetal cells, and should the drug be used? Fair question to ask. Let's look at it. It appears not to be the case, but come on. Charges of hypocrisy? Drop it.